Welcome to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro, powered by Beyond, where we dive heart first into all things events in the nonprofit world. Hi, I'm Amy Milne, your host and CEO of Beyond and the Nonprofit Event Collective, where we believe that your events matter. You're not just hosting an event, you're inviting people to join you in changing the world. We're here to talk tricks of the trade and share tales from the trenches so you can produce epic events that inspire participants, raise more money, and change lives. Let's dive in. I am beyond grateful to welcome Molly Fast, Director of Fundraising and Development at Event360, to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast today. Molly is the real deal when it comes to event fundraising. She claims she has been lucky enough to grow up in the event fundraising business. However, I think we in the biz are the lucky ones, including the thousands of participants that she has coached and the team she has led. She started on the sidelines of the event she's now been working on for more than 20 years. Cause-based fundraising isn't just her job, it's her passion and something she does in her personal life as well. You'll learn all about her incredible work and life in today's episode. I had the pleasure to meet Molly over 20 years ago when I was a baby fundraiser in the crazy world of P2P event fundraising, and it was Molly that taught me all that I needed to know when it came to supporting event participants in achieving the extraordinary. Molly is a friend to many, myself included, and I know you'll consider her your new event bestie when you are through listening to her magic. She shares so many great tangible tips and tricks that you can add to your book of expertise as soon as you press stop on this episode. Without further ado, Molly, welcome to the show.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be here.
Oh, I am honored to have you here. I like speechless sometimes because I feel like I am in P2P royalty right now. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. When I started in this field, 20 plus years ago, you were one of the first human beings that took me under your wing and taught me all I needed to know at the time when we launched the Weekend in Breast Cancer in Canada. And so This is like amazing that I get to share you with my listeners. So I know lots about you, Molly, but our good human listeners probably don't. So tell us about you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I am based out of Santa Monica, California, and I really like to say that fundraising is my love language. So fundraising is not just what I do for my job, but it's also what I do kind of on the side as well. And I've had the good fortune of working in this space for a really long time. I also like to say that I grew up in this world. I happen to be one of those people who had no clue what they wanted to do when they were in college. And I'm the youngest of four girls. I have a twin sister. All three of my sisters knew very specifically what they wanted to do. One wanted to be a magazine writer. One wanted to be a pediatric occupational therapist. My twin sister fell and broke her wrist and decided that she wanted to be an x-ray tech. And then there was me, and I was like, I have no clue what I wanted to do. So I was a communications major because that's what you do when you have no clue what you want to do. And I was like, I think I want to do public relations. That sounds amazing. Yeah. I had no clue. So I was a communications major at school, and I was coming up on my junior year, and I still really was like, okay, yeah, I guess I'll do public relations. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. And my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it changed everything, like it does for most people who have a loved one who is diagnosed with fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And while my mom was going through her first treatment or her first surgery, my oldest sister saw an ad for the very first New York 3-day. And so my sister decided to do the training and the fundraising while my mom was going through her chemo and radiation. Wow. And as a family, we went to Central Park in 1999, and we watched my sister finish in the New York 3-day. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but this seems really cool, and I want to do it. So I was in San Francisco the following year, and I decided to volunteer. And then I decided to walk in my very first 3-day in 2001. And I went up to Jeff Shuck on event. It like almost fell into him because I, of course, had blisters like on all over my feet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to I want to learn more about this. I started working on the 3-day in January of 2001, I believe it was.
Okay.
And, or was, no, January of 2002. And as I say, the rest is history. Mm-hmm. So when I say I grew up on the 3-day, I'm not kidding. I grew up mm-hmm. in this world and I feel so fortunate. I was doing high-tech PR at the time. And it was so not what I wanted to be doing. I mean, just the fact of like promoting programs and products that make it so you communicate less in person. Now, listen, I completely understand the benefits of all the technological advancements and all of the things that we have access to at our fingertips. But at my core, like I am a people person. I am all about relationship building and providing these amazing experiences for people to be a part of that change, kind of who they are as human beings. And so I just feel really fortunate to have fallen into this. I, you know, obviously didn't go to school for nonprofit management, or I didn't learn how to fundraise other than just doing it myself and watching the people around me in these events, how they did it. I've been at Event 360 now for 20 years. It was 20 years in the middle of January. And I just feel so fortunate to be able to do this work and to work on a project like the 3-day where you're just surrounded by the most inspiring humans, the people who participate in this event, to the incredible team at Event 360 that I have the pleasure of working with. It's just really been kind of the honor of my life, for sure.
I love all that. Thank you for sharing that. And I can feel... I literally can feel what that felt like when you went to watch your sister cross the finish line. I love knowing that feeling and having experienced it, you know, not with you in that moment, but with so many people just over the years. And I think that's for me what it's that feeling that made me want to continue to do what I do in the nonprofit space and fight for our, you know, our space at the table as event producers and fundraising specialists in the event world in nonprofit, because it's incomparable to anything else in the world, I truly believe.
Yeah. And I experienced this in my own fundraising, and it's certainly what I use to help with some of the programmatic aspects of what we do on the 3-day and when I talk with participants. But participating in these types of events for most of us is such an unbelievable way to know how loved you are by the people in your life. And it's such a unique feeling, whether it's that someone takes time to show up at the event to cheer you on, or whether they make a donation. It's just such a beautiful act of love. And I feel like of all of the benefits you get from participating in these kinds of events, that isn't really talked about a lot. But I think it's one of the most meaningful aspects of participating in peer-to-peer events, because at its heart, and I also tell participants this and my team all the time, someone is really donating, like the cause is secondary. They're donating because they love you and this is important to you. And so they're fine making a donation. And I see that all the time with my fundraising. As you know, I fundraise on the side every year. I have been for 12 years. I participate in Cycle for Survival, which for those who don't know, is an event that raises money for rare cancer research through Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And when I first started participating, it was just my spin instructor at the gym I belonged to at Equinox asked if I wanted to be on his team. And I was like, yeah, sure. I learned very quickly I was not a team player in that way, because nobody else was fundraising. And I was like, hold on a second. My fundraising is carrying all these other people. I was like, not happening. So, and then like a Cycle for Survival has a participation option where you can be an extreme rider, which means that you ride for all 4 hours and you have to raise a minimum of $4,000. But I started using that specifically as a way to just test different fundraising strategies and approaches. And it's been such a great, just a great like creative outlet for me to try to test things that I can then bring back to the participants who I work with.
I love that. And the fact that you say you fundraise on the side for this event, like this side hustle, I really need you to share with our good human listeners, like how much money you, because you just finished another one, my friend.
And I did.
This is not a side hustle. Like, this is a, like, honestly, you need to share, you need to gloat a bit because you just, you've raised a lot of money.
It's a side hustle in that luckily it's about a month or two of my time every year. Mm-hmm. But it is like, if I sound tired, it's because I just participated in this event on Sunday. So mm-hmm. I rode a spin bike for 4 hours. But my fundraising is bonkers. Like, my whole approach is, how many people in my life can I engage and involve in this fundraiser mm-hmm. so that it really becomes something that we are doing together? And Cycle for Survival just has the benefit, which, you know, many of us who work in this space, it's like, oh, well, that would be amazing if we had that kind of, if we had that ability to do it. But they have amazing partners and sponsors who will be like, hey, here's $1 million that you can use for a fundraising challenge. And so part of my strategy with my fundraising is it is to be very strategic with when I am asking for money so that it is around these times when you can get, you make a $5, you know, you make a $50 mm-hmm. donation and it's matched dollar for dollar. So I talk a lot about sometimes with my fundraising that, like, some of the money that I raise every year is Monopoly money in that mm-hmm. it's from these fundraising challenges. They do things like the end of it. Right now, there's a fundraising challenge going on where the top 20 individuals or teams who bring in the most number of donors between, I don't know, this like 2 week period mm-hmm. will get a $25,000 donation. Now, again, like, that's numbers that most of us in the peer-to-peer fundraising space, like, our heads would explode because for mm-hmm. some events, like, that's all that they raise, right?
Yeah, so totally.
That's why I say it's a little bit like Monopoly yeah. money. But what it's doing is it is creating something in me where I won't stop my fundraising, even though my event was last week, where I'll be like, hey, can I just get you to donate $5? That's all I need. So those kinds of things are kind of separate from my overall kind of fundraising strategy, which really with this is it's pretty much impossible to find people who haven't been impacted by cancer. Mm-hmm. I'm very motivated by this because my father died when he was 55 of a rare cancer, esophageal cancer. And I have no doubt with the money that I have raised and the money that this event has raised over the years that my father's treatment plan would be totally different today. And his chances of survival would be very different if he were alive and diagnosed today. And that feels really great to be part of it. Mm-hmm. But also with the work that we do, like, these events are an opportunity for people to give purpose to that pain, right? Like, and that's kind of what it is for me. But I do this thing, my spreadsheet for tracking all of this is bonkers. I ask people if there are people in their life who I can write on behalf of. And when I reach out to someone the following year, I'll say, like, hey, Mary, I'm doing this for your friend Leslie, and I'm doing this for your friend Wendy. Now, it's harder to say no to a donation like that when you're mm-hmm. making it so personal. But it's also because that person knows, like, I know their reasons why they donate to me. Mm-hmm. They know that, like, their friend or their family member is being remembered. So that's a big part of my strategy, is making sure that I ask who I can ride on behalf of. I reference that when I talk with them. And then I keep a poster by my bike that has a list of all of the people for whom I ride. And I say all of those names out loud. Yep. Well, to myself, which I could do out loud because it's such a,
yeah, it's loud.
It's so loud in there, but I call those names to myself. And it's honestly one of the most moving aspects of the ride for me, because I think about all of those people and most mm-hmm. of them I don't know. And yeah. so this is an opportunity for me to really engage people. But I have, like, my approach is to get as many people as I can involved in this process so that everybody kind of comes along for the ride. And so I, you know, for some people, you know, they have people who can give a lot of money.
Yeah.
My average donation size is $116 with 316 donors. So I really, like I said, I try to engage as many people in my life as I can to be part of it. And the super cool thing is I've raised almost $500,000 in my 12 years with Cycle for Survival, which is something I'm incredibly proud of. But it's also something that I share with all of the donors who have been part of this ride with me. And that feels really amazing.
You should be extraordinarily proud of yourself. And I've been a donor over the years. I'm not consistent, but I have, and I like being asked. And
there's still time. You can make a $5 donation.
I'm going to. I'm literally like, I can't not after this conversation, because I'm so, I love to watch, and I actually get like used to seeing your emails, and you know, I just need to take action. So I'm just an asshole, and so I need to like go. So I'm going to make a $10 donation instead of five.
But see, for this fundraising challenge, you should do two $5 donations.
Perfect.
That way, yeah, exactly.
Done. And I'll do. But what I love, but what I mean, you walk the walk, Molly, and that's what I think is so incredible. And I would say more of us in the event fundraising space walk the walk more than others.
Yeah.
And those who are in major gifts might get mad at me right now, but I really feel like people like you and I, you know, we know and truly believe that $5 is going to impact something somewhere. Mm-hmm. And whether that's buying a bike so a super fundraiser like you can ride it, or it's, you know, paying an incredible staff person who can reach out to make sure someone like you gets registered. Right. Like it all matters. And when it gets picked apart, it just drives me insane still to this day. Because yes, events cost money, but so does raising major gifts. I think that's like another place we probably could go and stay. But I mean, you literally do what you like in your job, you do in a personal way. And I love that you try stuff out, because clearly that's what you probably help coach your fundraising participants. Like, I mean, it sounds like you test it, it works, and then you can share it. And then others benefit from that when you're coaching your team and or fundraisers to raise money for the 3-day.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, you said like, you know, you really walk the walk. I feel like I've been very fortunate in my career in that I started out in the position of a coach, right? Mm-hmm. And now I manage the coaches who coach our participants and stuff like that. And so I feel in life, it's not always possible, but it is always really nice when you can say, I've been where you're going, or I've done what you're doing. And so to be able to lead a team or to lead a group of participants when you've literally been in their shoes, it's just very valuable. It's not necessary or needed to be a good manager or a good leader, but it sure does help, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing with my fundraising. It is so much easier to be able to tell someone or guide someone on what to do if you're one, literally doing it as well, but if you've done it. And I'm now, though, in this very interesting place where I think my fundraising approach can be really off-putting for some people. They're like, yeah, but I can't do that. I can't raise. Right now, I've raised $58,000 so far for Cycle for Survival this year. And again, like in the like full transparency, like, you know, as far as how much of that is Monopoly money through fundraising challenges, that's like almost 22,000 of that is, you know, these matches or, you know, fundraising challenges that they have going on. But that's still an extraordinary amount of money that I have raised with my own network.
Yes.
And at face value, you have to make sure that it's still relatable to people, which is why I really try to tell people, don't focus on how much money I've raised, like focus on the strategies. So you have to follow up with people, and you can't just do one follow up because people are busy. They're well-intentioned. Yeah. They thought that they've done it. They look at the date of your event. They see your event has passed and they're like, no, I guess I missed the boat. So there's so many different opportunities in which you can follow up with people. The whole part about like bringing your donors along for the experience, like I just think that's been one of the biggest keys to my success as a fundraiser in my personal life. And I think, you know, there's so many different kind of approaches that I take that I let people know will help them be successful. And I try to make sure that it's, you know, it can be relatable to a fundraiser at any stage, because I understand, like, here's Molly, she's raised $500,000 for Cycle for Survival. And that, like, they're like, what? No, I just have to raise $2,300 or I just have to raise $500. Right. So being able to still kind of keep that relatable. And I have had the very good fortune of managing some of the same people for 15 or more years. Yeah. There's someone on my team who's been working with me for almost 20 years as well. And now I have, you know, some newer people who are coming into the job. And so they're helping me see things from a different perspective in all areas. But like, as we look at some of our fundraising strategies for this year, it's like, I don't need to be the one who's out in front of this telling our participants who are, you know, if we're targeting this to people who are just starting out on their fundraising, I am not the best person
right
to talk with them about my fundraising history. It's better for them to hear from the people on my team who are new fundraisers as well and what worked for them. And I can then chime in and be like, but listen, there's certain things that every good fundraiser must do. And that is make sure you're comfortable sharing your story, ask for a specific amount, give your donors a deadline, follow up with people, thank them immediately, include them in your event experience. Like that stuff I can share without them having any idea like what kind of a fundraiser I actually am. And I think right. that's very important to know when to have that be part of what I bring to the table in conversations with fundraisers and when to keep it out of it. I look at it at, I asked my team a question once, are you a leader or a follower? And I was so surprised at how many people said that they were a follower. And then they were like, what about you? And I was like, I'm a leader who knows when to follow. And I think about that in terms of my fundraising, right? Like that's something that I need to kind of keep in check. Like I know when to kind of put that information in front of people, but I know when to keep that away from people because it's when it doesn't inspire people, it intimidates them.
Right. I think that's such an interesting perspective because you are coming at it with, you know, 20 years experience on the front lines and on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm always challenged with, are there still, you know, when we coach clients or work with people and it's that thing of like, people are like, you know, a lot of our clients are like, but people know how to fundraise. It's like, no, they actually don't. Like we've made it, yes, it's more mainstream. We've made it easier for ourselves because pledge forms are no longer a thing and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't mean every single human being who participates in an event has fundraised before or knows that how to do it. And I think we forget when we've come further down the line, like you and I know that sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, it's so easy. Like I even sometimes say to my friends, I'm like, yeah, but I just raised $1,000 like yesterday. And they're like, yeah, but I can't. And it's like, well, yes, you can. But you're looking at someone who's like, you and I have gotten over the fear of asking.
Exactly.
We could just be starting with someone who's never asked before. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they don't have a network that they could tap into.
Or Amy, even someone who isn't comfortable sharing their story.
Well,
we do these things on the 3-day social hours, which, you know, were born out of COVID, which just go on Zoom and kind of be together as a community. Because one of the most beautiful aspects of the 3-day is the community. And so we do things to try to foster that community all year long. And I'd asked people on the call, there are probably about 70 people, which is really good in like post-COVID numbers to have like 70 people on Zoom. But I asked if, you know, who was new to the 3-day and if anyone wanted to share their story. And we had someone who shared her story with us for the first time. She was like, I don't know why I feel so comfortable doing this here. She's like, I don't know if it's because I'm off camera or what, but she's like, I didn't tell my family until I was done having surgery. And she's like, and I haven't told most of my family and friends like that this happened to me. And so I think we're also surrounded by people who they don't want to share their story, right? And so some of it is really just getting down kind of to the level of you sharing your story literally could save someone's life, right? Because you will inspire the people in your life to go get a mammogram, right? Or to go talk to their doctor or to look into X, Y, or Z or to advocate for themselves. And so there are so many ways in which we can really help people see the benefit of their participation and the benefit of sharing their story. That's not even just get over asking people for money, right?
Right.
But like, there's so much power in what you're doing just by showing up to do this event.
And what are, for those, you know, good humans that are listening right now and they're like, okay, I'm like, I'm loving this. Okay. But Molly, so what is a tip or trick that you have to get people to start to share their story? Because I agree with you. I think, you know, we go right to the fundraising and that's where I went, and right to the heart of the human. And it's like, how can, like, if you are the first person they're talking to, what are some ways that you found or your team's found that can really be helpful to make a space safe for someone to share?
I think it's literally inviting people to share their story, right? Because that participant was never going to raise her hand and share it if I didn't ask if they wanted to share it.
Right.
And so those of us in this space, we have so many points where we're interacting with participants. And how many times do you start that conversation with, well, you probably start the conversation with, what can I help you with, right? Mm-hmm. But what if you actually took a step back to say, Amy, thank you for calling. Before I address your question, could you tell me, how did you find your way to this event? Or what's your connection to the cause? And I think it's just really important. Again, I try to impress this with my team of, there's like the way, and then there's like the Molly way. So there were a couple of times last week where I was giving someone on my team feedback, and I was like, I said, if someone's asking a question, for example, you know, before you just launch into it, like, Amy, you know, thank you so much for asking that question. We're so glad that you're here. So it's just like little things in which you communicate mm-hmm. with people where we make them feel like a person and not mm-hmm. a participant, if that makes sense.
I love it.
And so I think taking that to your specific question about how do you get people to share your story, ask them. Mm-hmm. I just think sometimes like we make things so much more yeah. complicated than it needs to be. But it's like, I don't know, ask them, right? Or give them a platform, right? Yeah. If you have a Facebook group, you know, you can ask, what's your connection to the cause? What brought you to this event? Who are you participating for? And, you know, a lot of us in this space, like we have participant emails, you know, that are sent mm-hmm. where we're highlighting participants. And so I think it's important to kind of get the voice of the participant out there and to feature some of those participants. And again, like we have these Facebook groups that's, you know, in terms of like meeting our participants where they're at, that's where a lot of our participants are. So there is a lot that we're doing to really try to foster communication and community among our groups in the off season in those Facebook groups. But we also have blogs and, mm-hmm. you know, there are ways to do that. And then when you're on event, right, it's finding those special participants and those stories that you can highlight. And, you know, I was preparing for this and listening to some of your podcasts. And so I was listening mm-hmm. to the one that you had with our friend Matt Glass, a mm-hmm. total legend in this space yes. as well. Yeah, someone who I really, really admire. And I loved listening to him basically be like, I'm a little like, I just loved how insistent he was that like, this is not where sponsors get up and they speak, you know,
right.
like
yeah.
you got to put the power of that in those moments with the participants who have these compelling stories to tell that remind your participants why they're there and why they're mm. fundraising for you. Or as he said, in the case of events where they may not have to fundraise, you want to tell them something that inspires them to want to contribute towards that. So I feel like there are so many moments through someone's participation in an event or their interaction with an event where you can, but I think at its core, it's just asking someone to share their story. And I think conversely, it's also respecting if someone doesn't want to share right. their story, right?
right?
Like, that's okay. This is a safe space and yeah. we're here for you when and if you want to share it, but you don't have to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, so much of what we do comes back to that just simple ask. And mm-hmm. you're either going to get a yes or you're going to get a no. But if you don't
exactly.
ask, you get none of it.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's a golden rule of fundraising. It's a golden
exactly.
rule in how you, like, if you're going to get a date or not, or if you're going to have someone share their story.
Yeah.
And, you mm-hmm. know, it's funny that you bring up Matt and that specific topic, because I was at an event on Saturday here locally, and I literally listened to someone like make a call out to someone who was on the staff who was retiring. And they were like, thank you for staying on to help with this. And I was like, Yeah, that's not like you're thinking them. Like, I'm sorry, there's 300 people standing out here on the coldest night of the year, and you're thanking her for staying. I was like so confused. I was like, no, nope, clearly you haven't listened to Matt Glass's episode. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be sending it to this group. Because I was just like, that doesn't matter to me.
Right. Like, yeah.
You know, it might matter to the fundraiser or the participant that's been at this organization and knows the players, but I was brand new to this organization. And obviously I'm like the worst person to bring to it, you know, like because I'm going to find out. I'm going to celebrate the moments. They had great cheer teams. Like, they did a great job on many of the things. But I was like, oh my God, you just thanked someone for staying on past the retirement date. I'm like, I don't understand why that person, like, you didn't even tell me who raised the most money. Like,
yeah, you're like, that's a missed opportunity.
What?
Yeah.
You didn't even have someone who's just, anyways, I was just like, whoa. But I do, like, I think people's stories, we want it. We want to hear them. We want to share mm-hmm. them when we're ready. Not everybody mm-hmm. shares. I mean, and I think that's a great reminder too, because, you know, I personally happen to be an open book. So if you asked me about to tell a story, I would, but that doesn't mean that everyone is like that. And so, you know, where someone like myself and maybe you might share it automatically, if we haven't created a space for that one, mm-hmm. that amazing human who just needs to be asked, mm-hmm. I think that's so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think sometimes people, I would imagine, like, they don't want to be the poster child for cancer, right? Or fill in the blank, like, especially after they've already been through treatment and like they've allocated enough of their life to that. They don't want to be the patient, you know, they want to be the participant. They're on the other side of that. And there are some people who are like, you know, I have someone on my team who, you know, part of almost every conversation she has is, you know, my life was drastically changed by money that was raised by participants like you. Her treatment went from, I'm going to get the number wrong, but she was supposed to have like 54 weeks of treatment that went down to like 16 or something like that. And that was a direct result of money that was raised by, you know, the event that we work on. And so some people have those stories that they really want to share. But again, it's meeting people kind of where they're at, for sure.
For sure. What are some, like, what if I, okay, I'm like, what are your top three tips for a new fundraiser who is, you know, they're sitting at their desk and they're mm-hmm. responsible for coaching or, you know, helping their event participants? What are some of your best advice?
Well, one, I hope that you have fundraised yourself. And if you haven't, I would recommend that you sign up for an event in which you are required to ask people in your life to support something that matters to you. Because I do think that it does make you a better fundraiser and mm-hmm. a better coach mm-hmm. to those participants if you can say, I'm doing what you're doing, or I've been mm-hmm. where you're going. So that's the first one. The second one is, use every opportunity you have when you are talking with your participants to connect with them on that human level mm-hmm. so that they know that at the end of the day, you care about them as a person and not about who are they bringing in for donors and how much money are they raising. That will follow. But I think building that rapport and focusing on that relationship will help just make that connection as strong as it can be. And three, at the end of the day, like, you have a job. And I think it's really important to remember that the role that you serve in inspiring and working with participants is helping to serve such a greater purpose. And so I think just as we ask our participants to step out of our comfort zone, like, you have to be willing to step out of your comfort zone as well. And I think sometimes that's like, hey, I see you haven't started fundraising. How can I help you? Or, wow, you've raised $1,000. Have you considered changing your goal? Mm-hmm. And I think, again, our job is to kind of keep finding those moments where we can push the envelope. And mm-hmm. if you've fundraised yourself or are going to, and you've built those relationships, it makes it so much easier to do that third part. That's really hard for me, though, to keep it to just three, because I'm like, well, there's this and there's this and there's
this. Well, hey, what else? What can't we miss? What can't we miss?
No, I mean, I think that gets the gist of it. But I think, like, beyond the three, it's just, it's, you know, it's there's certain things you can always tell fundraisers, especially first-time fundraisers, which is don't make a decision for a donor. Your job is not to decide where someone thinks it's important to put their money. I have been more touched by a $5 donation from a friend who really didn't have a lot of money to give, more than I was from someone who gave $3,500. You know, and I look at my fundraising over the years and I'm like, oh my God, okay, this person's in between jobs. Just mm-hmm. send it. That's your job, is just to make the ask. What happens after that? Like, you know, let it play out how it should. Always like to tell people, like, no one is going to give you more than they're comfortable with. You can ask for a specific amount. And I do always recommend that people ask for a specific amount. And if that's going back to people who donated before, tell them how much they donated last mm-hmm. year and maybe ask them to throw in $5 more. Mm-hmm. But if they haven't donated before, give them a jumping off point. No one is going to give you more than they're actually comfortable giving or can give. And no one is going to give you their last dollar. They're just right. not.
Yes. They will eat tonight. That is a thing.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
100%. One, before, because I could talk to you forever, but you have a life and others as well. But I do, one of the things that I want to touch on, because you talk about communicating with people, you talked about being on the phone, you talk, like, how are you building these rapports right now? And I, because I don't believe it's one thing, and I just want to hear from you as to how do you build these relationships with these participants?
Yeah, well, I think for me in particular, you know, like many of us, COVID changed, just absolutely everything.
Yep.
And so one of the ways in which it really changed things for me is I went from being very much behind the scenes to being the face of my event for a long time, right? Like most of our staff ended up getting eliminated since we weren't producing events that year. And so I became way more involved with with the participants, mm-hmm. which was really, really great. And I would recommend, like, especially if you are at manager, associate director, director level, VP, whatever, find those moments where you can actually just interact with your participants. Mm-hmm. I feel really grateful for that opportunity. One, it helped me be a better manager and a better leader to be able to do the work that my team was doing. Now, this isn't whatever that TV show is, like Undercover Boss, like not everybody has the time to do that. And also, like, we also have very important jobs that we're doing, which is why we can't do the jobs that we have other people to do.
Right.
But I think finding those moments where you can connect with the participants. And for us, again, like, I'm working on a long-time project where, like, that has changed very significantly. We used to, almost everything was exclusively in person, but as we know, people don't show up to things in person anymore. They just, they don't. They show up to the event, but the things that you do pre-event to try to get people to buy a pair of sneakers, well, they do that online or go to an info meeting. They can do that on the phone.
Yeah.
So I think for us, it's a lot of like finding different ways in which we can get in front of our participants. And so those connection points are things that I've already mentioned, the Facebook groups and going live on Facebook. That's been a way that like we really can connect with our participants. Mm-hmm. We have these social hours. We do them once every 2 or 3 months. That gives us an opportunity to talk to participants. And so that's another thing that we do. But it's also like talk to people on event, right? Like remember, you're not so busy zip tying, you know, 5 million signs that you can't or shouldn't stop to actually cheer some of your participants in or to go out onto the route or to seek out that top fundraiser or that team captain who's been around for a really long time. So to me, it's finding those moments and just remembering like you're not too busy or you're not too important or you're not so high up in an organization that you can or should forget about the participants who make all of it possible.
Well, that's just it. Mm-hmm. I think that is a great place to stop. I think I probably need you back or you just need to do a masterclass in all things, which you do so many times. And I'm so grateful for your time and your expertise and your experience, Molly. And I know that you inspired me all those years ago and taught me how to make an ask and how important participants were. And I am forever grateful for that. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, how could they do that?
Yeah, MFAST, F-A-S-T, I like to say, as in the opposite of slow, at event360.com is a great place. They can email me. I'm on LinkedIn as well, although I'm definitely one of those people who's like, what? LinkedIn, what? Yeah. I don't think I tap into its full potential. But yeah, and I'm happy to talk with people. You know, I love fundraising. I love working with the participants and being kind of that voice for the participants and that person on the team who's like, well, did we think about this from the participant's perspective? I'm happy to talk with anyone about any of it. And like, as you said, I think I'm like, wait, this is already, we're already done? I could keep talking for a few hours.
I'm going to invite you back. We finally got to this through life. You know, it took us about 6 months to actually get this date. Right? But now that we've done it, when we're like, yeah, we'll do a part two for sure.
Exactly.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I know our good humans will have gained an extraordinary amount of new expertise with you. So thanks, Molly. And I look forward to having you back.
Thank you so much. What an honor. I appreciate it, Amy. And I appreciate everything you do.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks so much for listening and doing good in the world. We see you. We can't wait for you to join us next time when we hear from another good human who will share their story, along with tips and tricks that will help you execute extraordinary events that are sure to have a lasting impact on your participants, beneficiaries, donors, and colleagues. Make sure you follow Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review the show so other nonprofit event pros just like you can find our podcast so they too can create events that matter. Tune in next week to laugh, cry, and cheer with us on another episode of Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro. See you soon. Hey, good human. Are you hitting roadblocks with your events and marketing and need a bit of help to take it to the next level? We've got you. Sign up for our monthly hot seat coaching where we will answer your questions live on the podcast. That's right. You'll get to join me, Amy Milne, and my colleague, Lisa Cohen, right here on Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast. And we will share our expertise to help you with your specific questions. Sound good? Great. Fill out the quick form by following the link in the show notes and we'll take it from there. We're stoked to have you on the podcast, good human listener, to guide you through your current challenges. Keep it real.